Welcome to City Talks, a monthly podcast looking at the big issues facing UK cities and the latest thinking on urban policy. I'm your host, Andrew Carter, from the think tank Centre for Cities. I hope you enjoy the episode. Welcome to this edition of City Talks. Our topic today is the Metro Mayor elections that are taking place on the 6th of May, when more than 20 million people, that's 40% of England's population, will have a chance to vote for a Metro Mayor in eight areas across England. I should say that we're recording this episode on the 16th of April, 2021, so a few weeks before the elections. And I've got three brilliant guests to talk about the elections, the policies, the politics, and the personalities. They are Rob Parsons, political editor of the Yorkshire Post, which also has its own excellent political podcast, which I listen to, Pod's Own Country, well worth a listen. Francesca Gaines, a professor of public policy and academic co-director of policy at Manchester, at University of Manchester. And Richard Brown, who's the interim director of the Centre for London, as well as being its long-term research director. And he's the co-editor of a recent brilliant book looking at the 20 years of the London Mayor. So those are our three guests. Welcome to you all. So I want to start, before we get into the detail of the various mayoral elections, So my sense is that the upcoming Metro Mayor elections are of greater than normal importance. And it's not just because, you know, of COVID and then obviously the huge recovery challenges that the new mayors will face. It's not just, I suppose, because, you know, the Metro Mayor elections are taking part in a very, very big local government election process as well, where, you know, there are lots and lots of places and lots of seats up for debate. But it's also, I suppose, the sense, or my sense at least, that, you know, the very idea of having Metro Mayors seems to be under review. It's up for debate, it's up for question, and particularly by this government. So I suppose, firstly, you know, interested in your views, do you agree with that? And how then do we think about the elections in that sort of broader context of, you know, the pandemic recovery, realignment of party politics, and the merits of devolution more generally? Rob, let's start with you. I mean, how do you see, you know, where do you see the importance of, you know, of these kind of elections? Do you agree that it's, you know, it's of greater than normal importance?
Oh, yes, I think so. I mean, obviously, everyone talks about it being a Super Thursday, don't they? And a huge slate of elections up and down the land, which is very much the case in our patch in Yorkshire. But yeah, I think the Metro Mayoral election in West Yorkshire is the one that we're paying probably a bit more attention to than the others. I think just because of, you know, the role that mayors could potentially play in helping the recovery from the pandemic. I mean, I think I guess that role is there to be shaped to some extent because they don't have a sort of statutory involvement. But, you know, you do see, you know, in different examples around the country of mayors sort of putting their stamp on things to try and help their economies move in whatever direction. And so I think, you know, moving out of the pandemic, as we hopefully will be in the coming weeks and months, the decision that the people who end up in these Metro Mayoral roles are going to have a pretty big role to play in the way that, you know, West Yorkshire and Greater Manchester and the Tees Valley develop in the years to come.
Yeah. Francesca, your view, you know, in the sense of the broader picture about, you know, it's not just an election for Metro Mayors, but actually there's a broader and more significant context. Would you agree with that?
Yes. And I think the thing for me that I'm interested in is that what you get is a kind of a clash of legitimacy. So you've got these directly elected politicians, you know, with huge majorities, far greater than any MP, with this personal mandate and legitimacy and authority, which we saw Andy Burnham exercise very, very vocally against the power of the British state as it's normally operates. And it's clear at the moment the Treasury is trying to take control of the agenda again. So I think it's that interesting clash of how do we run, especially England, you know, who's in charge, who's got the authority and the legitimacy really to speak and to act.
Yeah. And Richard, I mean, you know, in London, we've seen, you know, kind of interest, I mean, just through the COVID sort of lens, you know, real interaction or clashes between the mayor and, you know, government as to who's making decisions, who should be making decisions, and all the rest of it. So do you think there's a kind of broader play here in terms of the, you know, where we are with our Metro Mayors? Obviously, London's had it for 20 years. Other places, West Yorkshire hasn't got one yet, but will have. Just put it in the kind of broader context for us.
I think that's a really interesting point. I think it does feel like a challenging time for the Metro Mayors at the moment. You know, I remember going to the Conservative Party conference in Manchester in 2019, and it was a strong devolutionary flavour there. Boris Johnson, some of his ministers, really talking about giving across the country, having the equivalent to Metro Mayors right across the country. And that felt very positive. It felt like cleaning up what's quite a messy local administration structure at the moment in England. And that seems to have, that tide has definitely receded. I think for some people in government, you know, handling the COVID crisis has been the return of the central state. And even when government is talking about levelling up and regional policy, it's about shipping central civil servants out to different parts of the country. It's not actually about passing powers to different parts of the country. So I think there have been clashes in London. I think the mayor over the past year has been clashing on his London plan, on the funding arrangements for transport, on other details around London. I think that challenge of clash of legitimacy has probably been accentuated by the fact we've had this weird year where we've had postponed elections. So people have been on election footing for a whole year. I think for London and for the other cities, we really need a cooperative working relationship for the next few years. Otherwise, it will be hard to make recovery work.
Yeah, not quite. I'm wondering, to again, get your thoughts on it, is that it's been interesting that over the period of the last, when they've been in port since 2017, there hasn't been that many occasions where they've come together to work as a group of mayors. You know, they've done their things in different ways. I just wonder whether, you know, in hindsight, is that a mistake in the sense that, you know, coming together to be more than individual mayors and then articulating that to government. Do we think that's been a mistake? Francesca, what's your thought on that?
Well, I'm interested you say that, Andrew, because in some senses I've felt that there has been times when, you know, the West, Andy Street and Andy Burnham have come together even during COVID. So I've felt that there has been some occasions when the mayors have taken a platform together, especially around issues of transport, of course.
Yeah. Okay. Richard, because London has always been in a slightly, I don't know, maybe I'm being unfair, but somewhat removed from, you know, from the other metro mayors is always my kind of impression. But what's your thought on that?
I can't remember the precise mechanisms, but they do have regular meetings. I know regular meetings of what was known as the M8 at one stage. Yeah. I'm not sure that's the right number anymore, but so there have been those regular meetings. And I think the other metro mayors meet on occasion with Sadiq Khan, on occasion without Sadiq Khan. I think the challenge is that there are two big issues here. One is about regional policy and rebalancing, where the politics of this work for other cities, other metro regions to be against London, to define themselves not necessarily in opposition, but in competition with London. But then there's the devolution debate, where it actually works for everyone to be working together towards the same goal. So I think you sometimes see different public narratives, which may be about why is London getting this, why can't we have what London has, and vice versa. But I think some of the private discussions are more connected and perhaps more aiming towards the same objectives.
Yeah. And Rob, obviously, in your patch, you know, I mean, in a sense, we've got the Sheffield City Region Mayor now, but only, you know, relatively new. We are going to have the West Yorkshire Mayor in a few weeks. But in the run-up to that, you know, there was always that ongoing, we want a Yorkshire Mayor rather than a, you know, sub-regional mayors. I mean, how has that played out? I mean, how has that influenced where we are now, do you think?
Well, yeah, I mean, there has been a conflict in terms of how Yorkshire devolution should be configured. But actually, going back to the point you were discussing about whether metro mayors work with each other, I mean, obviously in Northern England, there is a statutory body, the Transport for the North, whose sort of raison d'etre is to bring together Northern leaders to speak with one voice. And there have been a few occasions where that has happened, that has worked quite well. I mean, after the timetable sort of disaster of 2018, when the new rail timetable was imposed and it led to sort of chaos on the railways of the north, Northern metro mayors sort of spoke as one voice about the need to tackle that issue. But then subsequently, sort of more local politics has sort of come into play, and I follow Transport for the North relatively closely, and there's been a few incidences where there have been sort of tensions between what one metro mayor thinks is best for the North and what another Metro mayor thinks is best for the North. Andy Burnham was pushing for an underground station for Northern Powerhouse Rail and HS2 in Manchester city centre, and Ben Houchen, the Conservative mayor of the Tees Valley, argued quite strongly that the amount of money that Andy Burnham was proposing to spend on that wasn't justified, and that Manchester is not the North, which was Ben Houchen's regular refrain. So while there is some occasions where Metro mayors come together, if the politics is right, I think there are also occasions where they feel it's more pragmatic to fight their own corner.
And do you think that weakens the institution of the mayor, or, you know, particularly in a collective sense, Rob? I mean, what does that help or hinder, not the individual per se, but the actual institution?
I don't know. I mean, I guess that there's, I mean, ultimately they are, the Metro mayors are always going to be beholden to their voters, aren't they? And they're going to need to, at the end of their term, as Ben Houchen is doing now, he's going to need to come back and say, this is what I've achieved. And that might not always be compatible with the role of Northern mayors working together, because there isn't always a very neat sort of Northern agenda when it comes to a few different things. So I think it depends on the circumstances, I suppose.
Yeah. Richard, and then Francesca?
I think, just building on that, I think if the system is one where mayors are perpetually vying against each other for funding for their city, for new projects to be allocated to their city, for civil servants to be relocated to their city, then there's always going to be that tension. I mean, if you look at a country like the US, all sorts of flaws in a lot of its mayoralties, you know, the mayors there operate in competition. They operate in competition for investment, but they're masters, mistresses of their own city. They have more autonomy over how their city operates. And I think that creates a more healthy atmosphere. Otherwise, if you are trying to call out central government in a zero-sum game for this bit of investment or that bit of investment, that will necessarily pit local leaders, mayors or other city leaders, against each other. And I think that does weaken the institution. It stops it being a grown-up debate about governance and what cities need.
Yeah, yeah. Francesca?
Well, this is just sort of to take us back to your first point in a way, Andrew, and that is, I think this the politics of being a mayor is something that the Prime Minister really understands and gets, I think. And I think that is protective of the ongoing devolution agenda. Although I understand there are tensions in the Cabinet in terms of, you know, how to play that. And certainly there's a determination to demonstrate muscular centrism, really, in terms of how to use the tools of the Treasury. But I think that Boris Johnson does get how to act as a mayor and how to cooperate as a mayor. And through, as Richard was saying, through the early part of COVID, there were regular calls, weren't there, between the mayors and the Prime Minister, which, so we have to hope that kind of cooperation will continue after the heat of the election.
I noticed in Centre for Cities polling that 2% of people interviewed thought that Boris Johnson was still Mayor of London. You must say there's been times over the past year where it's looked like Boris Johnson is one of those people, to be honest.
Yeah, no, quite. I agree with that. Yeah, the polling, I think, is always fascinating in terms of who some bits of the public still think is going on or not going on. But it's an interesting. I mean, interestingly, in the polling that we've just done and released, there is a very high awareness of those places that have mayors, in a sense. They know that they have a Metro Mayor, and, you know, in many places they can name the individual, but there's also a very, very strong demand or appetite for devolution, you know, for more responsibility, more control to be given to their places or to be had in their places. And I suppose, you know, in some regards, that's an optimistic finding. We think the government is responding to what the public wants ultimately, and we've seen this through the sort of red wall or blue wall agenda, where they're responding to voter interests. You know, that in an optimistic way, that bodes well for, you know, for maybe for the next round of devolution or for, you know, the next round of empowerment to the mayors. We'll get into the sort of the policies and the conversation, but just, Rob, starting with you, just obviously West Yorkshire hasn't got a mayor yet, but we'll have one in a couple. Can you just paint a picture for us? Where are we in terms of the state of play with the election and, you know, the runners and riders and all of that kind of stuff? And then we'll get into a little bit more of the detail. But just paint a picture for us about where we are with West Yorks.
Sure. I mean, it's been a pretty convoluted journey to get to this point, to be honest. The creation of the West Yorkshire Mayoralty goes right back to not long after George Osborne's Northern Powerhouse speech in 2014. And actually, West Yorkshire were quite quickly out of the blocks in terms of trying to get a bid together. But for various reasons, it wasn't able to stick, and they weren't able to get agreement from the government. And it was at that point that the idea of a so-called a One Yorkshire devolution deal sort of started to emerge, because it was kind of the only viable possibility that wasn't being opposed by various quarters. And this One Yorkshire is an idea that our newspaper strongly supported, and most of the local leaders in Yorkshire supported it as well. The idea of creating a mayoral authority covering the whole population of 5.3 million people would have given that mayor more clout than any other elected figure outside London. But unfortunately, the government didn't really like the idea. Boris Johnson actually said at one point in a hustings before he was elected Prime Minister that he was worried that the Yorkshire mayor might not be a Conservative, which I think possibly explains why there was some opposition to it. But the government also said Yorkshire and the Humber was just too big and diverse an area to form a coherent geography. So there was a bit of an impasse that sort of developed. And at the same time, there was the South Yorkshire devolution deal. So Sheffield, Doncaster, Rotherham and Barnsley was agreed in principle, but then that collapsed because Doncaster and Barnsley wanted to join the One Yorkshire deal. So Dan Jarvis was elected in 2018 as the Sheffield City Region Mayor with none of the powers and funding of the other Metro mayors. And then when Boris Johnson finally achieved a sort of healthy majority in the 2019 election, I think it became apparent to everyone that there was no other option really other than to go for a West Yorkshire sort of city region deal. So within a few months, that deal was done, and South Yorkshire's deal was firmed up as well, which kind of brings us up to where we are now. And in West Yorkshire, there are seven candidates who've declared themselves. It's the kind of mixture you might expect, I guess, as a few local councillors and as well as representatives of smaller, more local parties. I think it's probably fair to say there aren't any household names in the running, which is probably backed up by the Centre for Cities polling, which suggested only 3% of people in West Yorkshire could name any of the candidates who were standing. Yeah. And it's been a bit of a slow burn so far because of the difficulties in campaigning and so forth. But I think the two main contenders are Tracy Brabin for Labour and Matt Robinson, who's the Conservative candidate. You probably know that Tracy Brabin, MP for Batley and Spen, took over after the merger of Joe Cox in 2016. She's got a background in culture and the arts, and she's a former actress in Coronation Street. She served as shadow culture minister under Jeremy Corbyn and Keir Starmer. Matt Robinson, who's the Conservative, is a councillor in North Leeds. He's got a senior shadow role on Leeds Council, and he's previously stood to run as local police and crime commissioner. One interesting thing that came out this week is that Tracy Brabin clearly has the West Yorkshire celebrity vote in the bag. Patrick Stewart, the star of Star Trek and X-Men, who's from West Yorkshire, came out behind her this week, and she already had the backing of Jodie Whittaker, who's a star of Doctor Who, is also from West Yorkshire. So I think if it was all about securing the backing of leading science fiction stars, it would be no.
Well, I was going to say not only the celebrity, but I presume now all the science fiction, people who enjoy that sort of genre are invariably going to vote. So I think she's going away. That's kind of interesting, kind of longer view of how we've got to. So if West Yorkshire is kind of literally brand new, Richard, I mean, it says London is the opposite, right? I mean, it says obviously we've had a mayor for 20 years or so, 21 years. Just give us a sort of a similar sort of where are we now, lay of the land, particularly as we edge towards the election in a few weeks' time.
Well, the story in London is, it's very hard to say that the London election is on a knife edge or anything like that, because it looks like Sadiq Khan is streets ahead of Sean Bailey. I don't actually know fully how the other mayoral systems operate, but the alternative vote system that operates for the Mayor of London, normally you have to go to second preference votes for someone to get over the 50% mark. Some of the polls suggest that Sadiq Khan might get 51% of first preference votes. Sean Bailey's way behind that at about 30, 31, 32%. So, you know, a huge gulf between the candidates. And so it looks like Sadiq will definitely win. There are a huge number of candidates in the London mayoral election. I think it was about 20. There are some interest. I don't want to sound too prejudiced against one candidate or another. There are some, frankly, slightly bizarre candidates, not just Count Binface, but Piers Corbyn, the former Labour leader's brother and anti-vaxxer, Lawrence Fox running on an anti-woke ticket, and other people like Nims Bungay, who's run before, very much from a community background. He's a pastor in East London. But I suppose the front-running candidates are Sadiq Khan and Sean Bailey. And Sean Bailey's campaign has focused primarily on crime. Has been a big focus of that, and that does have high salience when Londoners are asked what the big issues are, but it's not cutting through in terms of vote share. The others, I suppose, among the front runners are Louisa Porritt for the Lib Dems and Sian Berry for the Greens. Sian Berry ran last time round. She came third last time round. She and Louisa Porritt are currently polling about the same, about 8% each. So it's quite interesting to see who's in third position. And in a way, it gives if Sian Berry also gets a seat on the Assembly, it gives her a bit of a platform that she's actually run as a mayor and has got a significant vote as a mayoral candidate. Other candidates, Mandu Reid, an interesting candidate, really articulate from the Women's Equality Party, and is running a very serious campaign and has been very vocal on a number of issues, particularly after some of the safety issues that have come up after Sarah Everton's murder. And UKIP putting up Peter Gammons, amusingly named, who is a slightly eccentric character, very focused on, he's a lay preacher, has a strong sort of religious belief, but has some quite bizarre policies. So there's a big range of candidates, but essentially Sadiq Khan has always said this is a two-horse race. He's even had pictures of him standing awkwardly next to two horses to illustrate this. It is a two-horse race. He looks like he's well in the lead. I think the interesting question will be, firstly, how much, you know, how well some of the either Sian Berry or Louisa Porritt do as alternative candidates. Perhaps how much the Assembly might change hands. The Assembly might well become more Labour dominated. The Assembly's voting system tries to avoid any party having control. The Assembly might go more Labour. And what this might presage, because we haven't got borough elections in London this year, what this might presage for next year's borough elections. And generally the feeling, and it's confirmed by the general election data, is that London is becoming a more Labour city.
Yes.
Which is, as fine as, obviously that's London's democratic will. I think there's a challenge there. If London becomes more of a Labour-looking city, it looks like a city that Conservatives can't easily win in, that's a challenge for working with government. I think Sadiq will almost certainly win. Sadiq Khan will almost certainly win. But how that relationship is forged with government over the coming years will be really important.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, that about, you know, the sort of party politics and how much that plays out in different places. And then depending on whoever the individual is, how they then relate to government. Francesca, you keep an eye on sort of the Greater Manchester area. I mean, just give us a sort of lay of the land in Greater Manchester.
Well, Andy Burnham was the only Metro Mayor so far to have been elected after the first ballot, so he didn't have to go to a second runoff. So I think he got 62% of the vote on the first ballot last time round. So, you know, I work with sophologists at the University of Manchester who will talk about there being election shocks sometimes, but I think the only shock in Greater Manchester would be if Andy Burnham wasn't re-elected. But there are 9 candidates. So if I should give some, in the interests of fairness, shout out the candidates. We've got Laura Evans for the Conservatives, an independent, Marcus Farmer, Melanie Horrocks from the Green Party, Simon Lepore from the Lib Dems, Alex Marvel, who's independent, Stephen Morris from the English Democrats, David Sutcliffe, independent. I think that's everybody. I attended a hustings online and it was very convivial. Many shared opinions about the future of devolution. I think the interesting thing in Greater Manchester will be the vote, as I understand it, will be counted together, but the boroughs separately. So I think it will be interesting to get a sense, and of course we do have council elections, how the what happens to the vote in the red wall areas and in those areas that have had funding from the Towns Fund, Cheadle, Bolton, Rochdale. That will be interesting. And I think it'd be interesting, you know, there could be some, just the turnout itself will be interesting. The turnout in Greater Manchester was 29%.
Yeah.
You know, can will it go above 30? I know in Greater London, the second mayoral election, the turnout went up to 45%. You know, will there be great engagement? How will COVID, fear of going to the polls play out?
Yes.
You know, for the parties, I think the issue is getting the postal vote out. And, you know, again, the sophologists that I work with will be interested in who turns out and what age group that is. And things like that might affect the vote, I think.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. Rob, you touched on it a little bit, but I mean, how does the sort of party politics and then, you know, the overall sort of party political persuasion of the area, does that mean, is it predominantly Labour and therefore, you know, Tracy Brabham will probably win just on the Labour vote? Because obviously one of the characteristics of some of the mayors, you know, Tees Valley is a good example where, you know, it's a Conservative mayor, you know, but there was, I mean, it's slightly changed now, but when he was elected, it was a strongly Labour area. Andy Street won in West Midlands where it was a bit more balanced, but still a kind of big Labour element to it. I mean, will we just follow party politics in West Yorks, do you think? How important is that?
Well, I mean, I think most people that we've spoken to who follow the polling think that Tracy Brabham is a strong favourite. And West Yorkshire as a whole is a Labour supporting area. I mean, all the the local councils in West Yorkshire are Labour run or have a Labour leader. So, and I mean, obviously the picture from the general election is a bit more nuanced than that, because quite a few of the red wall seats in places like Dewsbury and Wakefield went blue after being held by Labour for decades. Yeah. But I mean, I think the suggestion seems to be that result was in large part a rejection of Jeremy Corbyn and and Labour's position on Brexit. So given that we're past both of those issues now, I think you would expect that Labour would perform more strongly in these elections than they did in 2019. And obviously, as has been said, there's the local elections going on at the same time. So I think if it was just the mayoral elections by themselves, with the, you know, the low turnout that tends to come with that, you could possibly see an unpredictable result. But given that people will be voting for their local councillors as well, I think that makes it probably more likely that the expected result of a Labour mayor will turn out to be the case.
Francesca, yeah.
Andrew, you'll know that I'm going to say this, and that is that one thing that I'm really interested to see is whether we do get a woman mayor. And I think, you know, there are a couple of places where that could happen, and certainly West Yorkshire is one where it's most likely, I suspect.
Yeah.
And that would be great to have that. Only 13 of the 54 candidates are women for this mayoral election. So it would be good to see a diversity of what mayors look like to encourage.
Completely agree with completely agree with that. We've talked about that in different forums about and what, not just from a representative point of view, but actually, you know, what that means and the diversity of the views and perspectives, as well as just from a representative point of view. I think it's a really good point. Richard, come back to you, because you said a little bit about Sean Bailey, for example, is focusing on crime as his sort of thing. He seems to be anti-housing in some respects as well, which is a bit bizarre, but, you know, but nevertheless, I mean, just take the main candidates. Obviously you've got, there's loads, but I don't want to dismiss anyone else, but just for to have a conversation, really, I mean, just take the main candidates. Are there widely different views on, well, you know, what they think London needs to do or what the issues are, or is there a fair amount of consensus between the kind of main candidates?
I think there's a development of a set, I suppose different candidates have different policy offers and they're not always debating on the same issues.
Right.
And all of the candidates are committed to helping London through recovery. I think any candidate running for any election will be focused on recovery from coronavirus right now. I think Sadiq has focused quite heavily, in particularly what he's said, on jobs and Green New Deal as a way out of the crisis. I mean, London's, I think, had the highest rise in unemployment through this crisis. So Sadiq is very heavily focused on those issues, not an area where he has huge amount of direct power, but he's got some through the training budget, so, and also through the campaigning he's doing for Good Work. I think housing remains a biggish issue, and Sadiq, again, is pushing on a rent control approach, but also taking more direct control of house building himself, something he didn't do last time around in across London, across the country. Local authorities are doing a lot more house building directly now, and Sadiq is talking about setting up a house building agency within City Hall as part of his policy. Sean Bailey talking also about housing, but talking about affordable home ownership. I mean, quite a typical Conservative Labour split there. Talking about building 100,000 homes for £100,000 each is one of his big focuses. Lots of focus from all of them on youth work. I think that's a big issue. I think where we at Centre for London are a bit disappointed is perhaps there's not the, you know, transport is in a real crisis in London right now. Yes. Because of coronavirus, but also, you know, longer term trends in reductions in public transport use and, you know, need to think again about car use and how car use operates in the city. And none of the candidates, for good political reasons, are being quite bold enough talking about London-wide dynamic road user charging systems that actually charge road users across the city, which are needed to deal with zero carbon targets, but also for actually managing how the city moves around. So there's a certain amount of slightly regrettable caution, I think, on transport issues, because that's the big issue in the mayor's in tray, is going to be doing the next deal on bailing out Transport for London while we wait for passenger numbers to recover, but also thinking radically about what its long-term funding situation should be. So, but it is, as we saw over the summer with protests about low traffic neighbourhoods in London and other cities, it's pretty politically, well, certainly politically toxic, sometimes politically explosive when you start clamping down on car use or changing street configurations. These are issues that, you know, have very high salience when mayors get engaged in them. But it's a shame. With one candidate having such a big lead, you'd think yes. He might take more risks.
Yeah, well, I think that's the thing. In a sense, if it was in the balance, you can understand caution all round. But as you said, I mean, he's pretty much a shoo-in. I mean, either he gets it first time or he gets it from second preference votes either way. So, yeah, it's kind of slightly disappointing that there's more caution than maybe he needs to be. Francesca, I mean, similarly, just give us a view on, you know, the main candidates and, you know, the degrees of similarity, consensus or differences. I presume they're all on the, you know, they're all in the sort of context that Greater Manchester continues to grow, you know, it becomes more prosperous over time. You know, there's not the sort of retrenchment concerns. So I mean, what are there major differences between the main candidates or not?
I haven't picked that up about the issues that face the region in terms of recovery, both in the outlying towns and the city centre. So I haven't seen a great deal. As I say, the hustings I attended was almost confessional, and it was a very strong and cohesive kind of desire for a voice for the region. I mean, I think the interesting thing that that Andy Burnham's done in his manifesto is promise some deliverables, some of which are already in train, but also put some asks in there for more devolution, and that will be the interesting space in a way in terms of whether it's possible to take control of railway stations, whether it's possible to borrow to invest in housing and that kind of question.
Yeah, and it's an interesting one. And again, you know, he's a shoo-in. I mean, unless something quite dramatic happens, he either gets it on the first, he certainly probably gets it on the first vote, even more than Khan, and he'll certainly get it on the second preferences. So again, it's interesting to see, you know, the degree to which he's been very bold in what he's proposing and what he's advocating.
I think I'm interested to hear what Rob thinks about the Tees Valley election, because that is very close, and I think there are only the two candidates, aren't there? So there's been huge investment in the Tees Valley area with the new vaccine factory and the relocation to the Treasury to Darlington, not all of the Treasury, just some of it, and Towns Fund investments. So I wonder what you think, Rob, about what's going to happen in Tees Valley.
Yeah, because it's an interesting one. I mean, he's got very high, you know, Tees Valley knew that a very, very great majority of people knew they had a mayor, and actually, you know, on a personal level, they could name him as well. In a sense, they knew who Ben was. But Rob, give us a view on Tees Valley, and also give us a view on West Yorks as well, in sense of, you know, the candidates, are they saying the same things? When we did our hustings last week, I think, obviously Tracy Braidman wasn't on it, but the other main candidates were. Basically, they said the same thing.
Yeah, I think that's right, to be honest. But I mean, going back to Francesca's question, we write about some of the things that are going on in the Tees Valley quite a lot, and obviously the Treasury, or part of the Treasury, Treasury North, moving to Darlington, the Freeport as well. Don't forget in the Tees Valley is quite a big deal. I mean, yeah, you're right that Ben Houchen has a lot of name recognition. I'd say he was a pretty strong favourite for that election to get re-elected, and that he's put out a press release today, which I've got in front of me, about how the all the different council leaders in Hartlepool, Darlington, Middlesbrough, Redcar and Stockton have all endorsed him, which I think you might not have expected to happen a few years ago. I mean, they're not all Conservative, some of them are the independent council leaders. So it sounds like he has achieved a fair amount of success in getting political support. And I guess it's hard to know how much of that is the advantageous position he's found himself in terms of being a Conservative mayor in a red wall or blue wall seat that the government wants to see succeed. And I think, you know, if you compare the benefits that he's got out of devolution with Jamie Driscoll up in north of Tyne, I don't think anyone with a straight face would suggest that they've been treated the same by government. So I think he's been quite he's been well positioned in that respect. In terms of West Yorkshire, I mean, I think you're right that there's quite a high degree of consensus about what the issues are, and I guess a bit of variation on how you might tackle them. Transport obviously is the big one, and it's that well-known truism that Leeds and West Yorkshire is the largest metro area in Western Europe without a rapid mass transit system. And that's been a real sore point for many a year now, and most of the candidates say they want to sort that out, but that obviously is, you know, to a large extent up to the government, because they control the purse strings on this urban transport fund that the combined authority in West Yorkshire is going to be relying on to get this project done. I mean, as you say, Andrew, the hustings, which I watched that you did a few days ago, on certain issues, you could pretty much throw a blanket over most of the candidates. They all kind of had a consensus that the climate change and skilled jobs were the big issues in West Yorkshire. And obviously, productivity rates in the county are below the national average. That's something that needs to be addressed if the economy is going to thrive post-pandemic. Bus franchising is quite an interesting one. Tracy Braidman has said that she, if elected, will be bringing buses back under public control, obviously following in the footsteps of Greater Manchester. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens with that. But yeah, I think the issues are widely agreed upon in West Yorkshire.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's helpful. And it's an interesting sort of reminder, I think, in some respects, that, you know, whilst they are politicians of different stripes, the issues in places are common. And therefore, you know, once the politics falls away, you still have to deal with a transport system that maybe doesn't work or is underfunded or a skill system that is not producing, you know, people for the skills that are in demand, and, you know, the housing is not being built in the right place, or, you know, at the wrong rate, and therefore is highly unaffordable. So it's a kind of interesting dynamic, I think, around how politics then plays out. Francesca?
I was just thinking one issue that is potentially tricky going forwards, but also might separate the candidates everywhere, is airports and air travel and and the extent to which local economies rely on airports in the face of net zero. And so that, I think that that might be an area where there
has
is
that come up in the obviously there's a Greater Manchester, which is, you know, the 10 authorities are shareholders in the airport and get dividends from it and such. It has that come up in formally or informally that so far?
I haven't seen that come up in Greater Manchester, but I have in West Yorkshire.
Right. Yeah. And in Tees Valley, obviously, the mayor acquired the airport, or at least got a, you know, a big role in the airport.
His whole strategy was based around
airport-related strategy. Yeah, it's an interesting issue. Let's turn to the other side of the election. Not so much about who it is going to be, although Richard, your point about Rob, you made the same point about if the mayor is of the same political persuasion to the government, that, you know, that might suggest that there may be sort of different interactions. But I suppose the other side of the election, how do you see it kind of playing out? How will the mayor need to behave? How do you think, you know, that kind of interaction with government will need to evolve? Do they have, you know, do they have what they need in order to do what they've said they're going to do? It's kind of big questions, but I'm just interested in how you think this is going to play out the other side of the election. Richard, you go first on London, because, and you touched on, you know, the ongoing conversations about CFL and its funding. That's not just a short-term issue. That's a longer-term issue. The mayor's going to need to grapple with that, right?
You're quite right. It is a long-term issue, because I think the deal that Boris Johnson had done when he was mayor wasn't perhaps great for TFL. It was taking away central government grant and replacing it with retained business rates. Well, retained business rates are in trouble. Fares are in trouble. All of the main revenue support areas for Transport for London are in trouble at the moment. So the mayor will need to do a deal. Yeah, as I said earlier, I think and hope that after what's been quite a rocky year, the government's intervened very heavily on the mayor's London plan. It's held the mayor to what Londoners sometimes see as unfair conditions on Transport for London compared to what the National Rail companies have had, for example, which has been a straightforward underwriting from government, and other, you know, disputes on everything from university London waitings to distribution of funds like the Levelling Up Fund. And there's been a lot of dispute. A lot of that has been probably about running into an election. And as Francesca said earlier, you know, the Mayor of London has an electorate of 5 million. I think that's the second, we always used to say, that's the second largest after the President of France in terms of direct electorate. And there is that clash of legitimacy. And that is a challenge, particularly when you run into an election. I think through the last year, to an extent, Sadiq Khan has seen himself as a major figure in the opposition to this government. And that goes right from opposing Brexit in 2016, dealing with the consequences of Brexit, to rolling into the situation of the past year. All of which is a lead up to say that I hope that both government and the mayor will work together constructively in the coming years, because they really will need to. Above and beyond Levelling Up, which I think is going to stay an important priority for government, the government can't afford to let London fail. It's not within the government's interest. It's not within the UK's interest to let London's economy fail. So issues such as getting London Transport back onto its feet, getting London businesses working again, will be really important. Getting Londoners retrained for the new jobs that will be coming, those will all be very important. I think there is a huge shared interest between Mayor of London and government in getting those right, and a huge national interest in getting those right. So I hope that will, once we've done the election, that will overcome the party politics issues. I mean, mayors have worked with, it's interesting that most of the time the Mayor of London has worked with a party that's the same. It's only a period, the end of Boris Johnson's first term, he had 2 years working with a Labour government that was pretty constructive, actually. So Sadiq, again, has been unlucky compared to his predecessors. But I think beyond this election, they really need to work together for, you know, those big issues of getting businesses back into London, getting the transport system working, getting Londoners back into jobs.
Yeah, very good. That's a very good point. Francesca, in some respects, you know, kind of Andy Burnham, particularly over the last year, has again, you know, he set himself almost, you know, against, or at least in opposition to the government on various COVID-related matters. But also he was doing that, you know, before that in relation to the rail fiasco on, you know, and Northern Rail and all the, I mean, how do you see that evolving? What's your anticipation as we get the other side of the election?
I think there are three issues that I would look to. One is, there has been a challenge to the bus franchising decision, and that's going to be a potential point of tension going forwards, you know, can he deliver on actually rolling out, taking over bus franchising? Then in terms of the promise to deliver new homes, can he borrow to build? So those are going to be areas where the mayor will be pushing and there may be pushback. But I think for Andy Burnham and all the mayors, the big issue is what's going to be in the Levelling Up and Recovery White Paper, or whatever it's called, going to be called now. And, you know, what will the regional focus for skills and recovery be? And where will the funds be channeled? So I think that those are the bigger issues. And like Richard, I suspect that after the heat of the election has faded, and because of the urgent and desperate necessity to recover from COVID, that there will have to be conversations, there'll have to be cooperation, because for some things, you know, there is no other way than a devolution, further devolution, and working with combined authorities and mayors. Obviously, you know, the political tension is in delivering to towns and to areas that have felt left behind, alongside a sort of realistic economic focus on also supporting innovation and joining up of transport, housing across bigger areas. And that's going to be the dilemma, but managing that tension and what actual funding flows and decision making will be on the agenda going forwards.
Yeah, no, very good points. Very good points. Rob, thinking about the West Yorkshire Mayor, I mean, how do you envisage that? Do you see them setting themselves up in, you know, as a challenge to the government? Or, you know, do you think they'll end up, you know, in some of the ways working, trying to deliberately work with government, you know, be a trusted delivery body or delivery agent for the government? How do you think it's going to play out in West Yorks?
Well, I think both Francesca and Richard are right in that the metro mayors, to some extent, have, you know, they do have to work constructively with government. And I think West Yorkshire will be no exception to that. I mean, the, you know, with things like the mass transit system, the mayor will be reliant on central government funding for that. So I don't think it will be a case that, you know, on the assumption that it's Tracy Braben who gets in, that she will be immediately, you know, setting herself up as a very sort of hostile figure to the government. I guess, you know, there might be issues that she picks going forward where she adopts a more sort of aggressive tone. But I think, I suspect, you know, given that it's a new mayoralty, although the combined authority already exists, I think that it will be quite a sort of slow, possibly steady start, and that there are quite a few limits on mayors' powers, and, you know, it's not like they can just bend the local political system to their will single-handedly. They've got to, whoever is elected mayor will have to utilize this soft power quite a lot to sort of bring people together, because that really is the only way that many metro mayors can get things done, even in areas like West Yorkshire, where all the local council leaders are Labour as well. If it's a Labour mayor, Tracy Braben, if she does get in, will still have to get everyone on side. So she'll be picking her battles, I think. And I mean, she doesn't even get the adult education budget. She doesn't assume control of that straight away. She'll have to wait a few months. So I think it will be a sort of slow, kind of more deliberate process before anything big happens.
Yeah. So I want to close by just getting your views on, you know, I suppose optimism or not on, you know, on the sort of future of devolution more generally. You know, I sort of started by saying I've written about this in different places. I am genuinely concerned. I think that the government has gone cold on devolution, even though there's a real politic and a real economic rationale for why they shouldn't do that. And our polling suggests that there's a kind of voter appetite, a public appetite for more devolution. I still worry that the government's got themselves into a position where, you know, they've gone cold on it, and they will remain cold on it. But I wish to be talked out of my position, and I'm looking for you three to give me the reasons why I should abandon that position. But I don't know, Francesca, start me off. Optimism of the future for devolution?
I don't think that it can go backwards. if that's an optimistic position. You know, we're all reading the runes, aren't we? And, you know, I had a conversation with somebody this week that made me think that abolishing mayors was not on the agenda. You know, I think it'd be interesting to see what happens with, I agree with Richard, at the start of last year, the conversation was all about where's going to have a mayor next, how can regularise this, and it's, we're not there, we're definitely not there, but what will happen in Tyne and Wear, for instance, what will happen in the rest of Yorkshire, North Yorkshire, what will happen in the Northwest? It'd be interesting to see with the white paper where that momentum has ended up and where it's stopped. I certainly think the conversation's got to be a very tight and careful conversation about the benefits of what happens if you devolve decision making, and then that it's just really important to demonstrate that economic and that democratic case for devolving decision making.
Yeah.
But the momentum isn't bowling along, I would say.
Cautious optimism, Francesca, I love it. We won't go backwards is our starting point, which actually, even that is a good thing. I mean, I've had moments where I think, you know, I've thought we may even go backwards, but it's good to know that, you know, you don't think that is the case. Richard, give us your grounds for optimism. Are you optimistic? And if so, why?
I guess cautiously optimistic. You know, I do think that actually post-Brexit, there is a case for just thinking systematically about how power is distributed within the country. And I think the likely outcome in Scotland is probably going to, you know, push that debate forward. And I don't think English regions, English cities could be left out of that discussion. So I think there's a strong case. I also agree strongly with what Francesca said. I mean, I think we had a round table about this recently. We risk in sort of policy circles talking about devolution as an end in itself in a slightly purist way. I think helping the government to see how devolution can achieve better outcomes, how it can deliver better public services, how it can help actually enable levelling up and economic success in different regions of the UK is really important. I think talking about devolution in and of itself, you risk ending up using words like subsidiarity, at which point you've lost the entire audience. But I think there is a case, and I think you've seen that actually through this crisis. I said earlier that I felt that the central state was back through the crisis, and to a certain extent it has been. But I think in later phases of the crisis, there's been more appreciation of the role that local authorities can play in test and trace, in actually thinking about the public health activities. I think there were some big strategic mistakes made early on, not actually giving local authorities and local authorities' public health teams more power in this. And I think the government is learning that there are actually resources within the public sector, resources within local political leadership that can reach things that central government can't reach. So I think there are some positive lessons for devolution, as well as sometimes just big national action is what governments attempted to take. So I'm positive. I'm also encouraged, I think, by what Francesca said about that there's a bit of the Prime Minister that still cleaves onto this as an objective. And there's always a battle with the Treasury whenever you talk about anything to do with devolution. And maybe that will continue to be played out. But I think coming out of this, we need to rethink how this country works. And I think, and that's because of Brexit, but it's also because of this crisis. And I think devolution has to be part of that.
Very good. Rob, cautious optimism or wild abandon? You know, where are you?
Well, I guess the optimistic bit is that I think in my patch in Yorkshire, I would expect that the bits of Yorkshire that are not currently covered by devolution will become so in the next couple of years. Talks have just got started in North Yorkshire, although it's a bit complicated there because it's all linked in with a shake-up of local government, which is proving quite controversial. And in Hull and the East Riding as well, the talks are going to about devolution deal are going to continue after the or going to start after the election. I mean, I'd have to concur with Richard and Francesca that I think it's, well, I'd like to see more powers given to metro mayors, but I think there is still a sort of institutional reluctance in central government to, you know, they hold on to power as much as they can. They're still a sort of Whitehall knows best attitude. I mean, maybe perhaps the optimistic take is that moving hundreds of sort of civil servants to different parts of the country might sort of introduce a bit of a change in that mindset and give and, you know, introduce the idea that maybe it's better if decisions are taken by people who are closer to the communities that they affect. But I guess we'll have to wait and see on that one.
Well, I thank you all for your optimism. You've lessened the clouds over my head on these kind of matters, and indeed for your comments and engagement today. My guests today have been Rob Parsons, Francesca Gaines, and Richard Brown. Thanks very much for being part of City Talks.
Thank you for listening to this episode of City Talks, brought to you by Centre for Cities. You can find us on iTunes and Stitcher by searching Centre for Cities. Please rate, review and subscribe if you liked what you heard. You can also follow the Centre on Twitter at Centre4Cities or like us on LinkedIn for the latest updates on what the Centre is up to. If you have any comments on the episode or suggestions for topics we should cover in the future, we'd love to hear from you. Do tweet us or send an email to info@centreforcities.org. The music was from Palace Fires by Johnny Foreigner, used with permission, and all rights are reserved.